Connect with your biggest fans with Mascot Link. Help your mascot organize and track in-game seat visits with our powerful software. Generate revenue with VIP experiences for fans, like in-game seat visits and local holiday deliveries. Visit mascotlink.com. That's mascot-link.com to get started.
Welcome to the Party in the Back podcast. I'm your host, John Kudo. If sports marketing was a mullet, the business in the front would be forecasting budgets and measuring ROI, but the party in the back of that mullet would be conehead vendor guarantees, anthropomorphic celery, and men riding ostriches, throwing hot dogs at people, and we are here for that fun side of sports marketing on the Party in the Back podcast. We're pulling back the curtain on how to make the most memorable game day moments and how they're made. For the last 35 years, I've been immersed in the world of sports presentation, from mascot performance to producing large-scale events. I've worked at the intersection of strategy and spectacle. I bring experience from college in the NBA and global brands like Nike and WWE. And now, I'm focused on shaping the systems, the content, and the community that bring fan experiences to life at GameOps.com. We're a hub for ideas, tools, and conversations in the game operations world. On this monthly podcast, we talk about the people building that fun side of sports, like fan activation, stadium storytelling, and creating lasting memories for fans. Don't forget to check out our homepage on GameOps.com this month, including college-level content like Briefing 101, the art of getting your contestants up to speed and ready for success, and Hockey 101, an interview with hockey executive Eric Bonanno on how to build a promotion to educate your fans and how important that is. We have an imprinted feature on inflatable noisemakers, and our promo spotlight is on the turnkey promotion Build El Burrito, plus a look back at one of our first back-in-person reviews post-COVID from the Indy Fuel hockey team. There's still a lot to learn from how we adapted our shows and welcomed back fans. But first, let's get this party started with our guest, MILB.com writer, Benjamin Hill. It's the November edition of the Party in the Back podcast. We are joined again by Ben Hill, one of our favorite guests. Total insight, minor league baseball, great promotional mind, been everywhere, done everything. Always great to bring him in, especially this time of year when we're talking about our best of awards, which are coming in December. So first of all, welcome, Ben Hill.
Thank you. Good to be back.
We just talked a little bit about Halloween. You're getting ready for Halloween. I need you to share with everybody, Harry, your son's birthday costume. I'm sorry, Halloween costume, which is awesome.
Yeah, my son Harry is 4.5 years old right now. He's in pre-K. Very excited by Halloween, as almost all kids are at that age. And when we asked him what he wanted to be, with his first thought, best thought, and he never wavered, he said, and I, like I was saying to you, Kudo, I don't know what this is even a reference to. I just think it's nothing, just something that came to his own mind. He's a haunted mailbox. He's going to be a haunted mailbox. A possessed box of mail, I suppose.
Very spooky. So,
yeah, we'll see how he pulls it off. But yeah, he's got the mailbox, a literal mailbox costume from the USPS, decorated with some spider webs and googly eyes, and he's going to walk through the neighborhood like a haunted mailbox, and we'll see what happens.
Well, he's going to be a character of the game tomorrow night, which is a good cue in for what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about characters of the game with you, Ben Hill. But first, we have some breaking news here at GameOps.com. Ben, you are a part of this breaking news. I wanted to bring you in to talk about it. We have long, and I think it's 25 years running, 24 years running, had the best of GameOps.com awards, started in 2001. And this year, and it may not be permanent, but this year we're trying something different. We're breaking the mold. We have abandoned the best of awards. Ben, you were actually pivotal in this. We had a long discussion over breakfast one time, and we talked about it. I kind of told you I was a little bit tired of the format, and I just thought it needed to be shook up a little bit, and you kind of gave it the green light, and that's all I needed to hear.
Yeah, well, happy to play a role. I remember talking about that. Don't remember the specifics. That was a good breakfast we got. That was when I was in August on a little jaunt in Ohio visiting the Lake County Captains and Akron Rubber Ducks, and we went to a real decent diner there. It was in Cleveland proper, too.
Gus's Diner, Cleveland proper. Actually, it might be Euclid, but Cleveland, very close to Cleveland. An excellent breakfast, a great waffle. So, but Ben, I appreciate your insight. So I'm going to give a little bit of a lowdown about what we have planned that we're working on in November. You're a part of that as well. But we're shifting away from the Best of Awards, perhaps forever, but for sure for this year. It's just become kind of a heavy lift. It felt a little bit stale. And I just wanted to get away a little bit from the feeling of competition. I'm giving in a little bit to our friend Johnny Greco's push for me to use the pun of my name. Kudos to you. And instead of having best of, we're just kind of having awards. Like, we're giving little props, little kudos to everybody out there. I wanted to focus a little bit less on the awards and winning and shift the spotlight from competition instead to celebration. We're leaning into a little more lighthearted acknowledgement of the great work and creating the atmosphere where it feels more fun and uplifting rather than more exclusive or ranked. And I think it's going to hopefully foster some more creativity and more celebration about that creativity without the pressure of ranking and those nasty emails and phone calls that I get afterwards. Like, how come I didn't win? Why? All those things, which I can do without. Ben, I know you get a lot of heat. People come after you, right? If you don't vote for them.
Yeah, but I consider myself so above the fray. Doesn't bother me. Just like a king hovering above it all.
Well, so I'm looking forward. And what we've done is we have some lighthearted categories, a little bit more MTV style. So instead of best actor, we may have the craziest moment, things like that. So we have some fun planned for December. And I think it's going to be a good shift. And if it's not, you know, Ben, we reserve the right to go back to the Best of Awards.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, you can do whatever you want to do, but I think it's good to try something new and an obvious pun maybe. But I mean, I think the whole kudos for you. I mean, it just makes sense.
It does. I've fought it for a long time. I'm kind of anti-pun. But when I'm around a wordsmith like you, I think maybe we should lean into it a little bit more. So that's coming in December. I am excited to have you as a part of it. Do you want to spill the beans on what your category is?
I'm doing the best promo.
Yeah, we're doing best promos, which is right in your wheelhouse. You and I are going to get on the horn, and we're going to talk through the best promos in minor league baseball. I may insert a couple from other than minor league baseball just to shake things up a little bit, but that's kind of how we're doing it. We're loosening up a little bit. We're just going to talk about what inspired us and what we thought was creative and fun and just give some props, give some kudos, if you will, to teams all around the country. So I'm looking forward to that. Breaking news here on GameOps.com. We don't break a lot of news here, really, do we?
No, I don't think I've ever been on this podcast with you where we break news. So this is a first.
It's
I feel like real
exciting.
Journalists right now.
You want to take a little break and maybe we'll so we can gather ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah, come down from this high.
Exactly. Exactly. So Ben, you know, kind of in the same spirit, this could be a category. Maybe it will be in the future if this is a raging success. But one of the things that we talked about actually as a possible category was characters of the game. And you know them all because you traveled around. You've been everywhere, been to every minor league baseball park. And so you see a lot of these people who are really making a difference. And I'm going to give it a quick example that we both know. Eric, the peanut guy out in Washington, who was on the podcast this year, he started as a vendor and became their host. And now he's kind of one of the reasons people come to the game. And I think in that spirit, you know, you've identified a lot of these people who are just like, they're not like in a traditional category. It's not like the host or maybe the host, maybe the mascot, but sometimes it's just something different. And it's unique to the ballparks, unique to the area. And sometimes they're paid. Sometimes they're just like super fans. But we wanted to talk about and highlight some of those things that you've seen, kind of give some props, give some kudos, if you will, to these people all around baseball, all around minor league baseball that you've seen and enjoyed over the years. So Ben, I'll open the floor up to you. Take it away with one that jumps off the page to you as one of your favorites.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a hard category to categorize, if you will, because, you know, every team has a character in this and it has a mascot, and the mascot's always the purpose of the mascot is to be a big, memorable character. So, but we're not talking about best mascots. And then it's like, what are we talking about? For the most part, I stayed away from fans here because even though super fans, they might not be at every game. They might be here one year. Their situations might change. But I was looking. I think Eric, the peanut guy, is a good example. He is now in the front office of the Tri-City Dust Devils, but someone who, with his consistency and energy, and unique personality, became associated with the team, in the same way that the mascot is, and someone who really adds a lot to the ballpark experience. You know, Eric does on-field hosting duties. He doesn't really do much vending anymore, but he still wears the peanut vendor apron, and that's what his roots are with the team. Kind of sort of similar, but not really, but another on-field host. You know, every team has a on-field MC, or these days it's often an on-concourse MC while I do between-inning stuff off the video board. But, very few of those are real characters in and of themselves, but one, I got to go with my local team, the Brooklyn Cyclones. They've got King Henry, and it's funny because, I live in Brooklyn. So when I talk to people about minor league baseball or just do a little, bullet point of like what I do, the Cyclones are always people's first association with minor league baseball, being that I live in Brooklyn. And then King Henry comes up almost inevitably, more so than Sandy the Seagull, the mascot. And just, he's an on-field MC, and he dresses in a King's outfit, I suppose it is, this kind of velvety red costume with a crown. And he's just out there every single game, emceeing all the, pregame, between inning contests, leading cheers in the crowd. And a Brooklyn Cyclones minor league game is really, you just wouldn't think it'd be the Cyclones without King Henry there. So I think.
I got a question right off the page here. It's like, we can talk about the secret handshake aspect of this in a second, but like, what's the origins? And as someone in Brooklyn, do you know why he's a king and what that is? And do you
I
casual
don't,
fans?
I don't know. I think at one point I did. I think looking into him years ago, I did. He also did that job for a while also in Staten Island years ago when Staten Island, had a New York Penn League team, the Staten Island Yankees. He would do it there as well years ago, but he's Brooklyn much longer. Yeah, how he got to be a king or chose that for the whole on-field getup, that is something I should look into because it's been a while since I've explored the origins of King Henry. Another one, if we're going with characters and costumes, Eric the Peanut Guy started as a vendor. You don't see many vendors in minor league baseball these days. You see less vendors in sports, period, which I find sad. Just with like order to your seat and more points of sale all around the ballparks, the way they're set up these days. But the Buffalo Bisons, who play in a big stadium, which allows for more vendors than most, just in its sheer size. They have Conehead, the beer vendor, and I don't know if you've come across him before, Kudo, but he wears a giant cone on his head. And he's been doing it so long that, yes, that is a reference to the Saturday Night Live sketch, The Coneheads, which was a new pop culture reference in like 1977 or whatever when he started doing it. Like his
that's,
wife.
That's
for
a little
some
dated,
reason,
but that's okay.
Yeah. So he's been doing this for decades, like 50, better part of 50 years now, selling beer. And he does it at the Rochester Red Wings games sometimes, and of course, other sports throughout Buffalo. And this guy, if you've been to any sporting event in Buffalo, bam, Conehead, instant recognition. And there's stories of, people turning 21 and, wanting or needing to get their first legal beer from Conehead and making that a rite of passage. He says, you always get the Conehead guarantee when you buy his beers, that they're super cold. And I guess that's all you really need is a guarantee. But it's just
all
like, take it from me, get the Conehead guarantee. And it's funny that here's this guy. He's got to be in his 70s now or close to it. He's been doing it so long, still out there. It's a very physical job.
Yes.
And he's made so many more sales throughout the years just through this one simple gimmick of wearing a cone on his head and, having that vendor voice and, booming voice and big, big personality. And I get nostalgic because, like I said, you don't really see vendors much anymore. I remember going to a Mets game this year and thinking to myself, wouldn't it be cool if teams just set up like peanut vendors near entrances, even if it wasn't huge for like the amount of sales they get, but just to kind of create right when you walk in that feeling of the ambiance, people yelling like, get your peanuts here. It kind of makes me sad that you don't have that, because when people romanticize baseball, you think of the vendor's voice kind of echoing through the stadium and you just don't hear it anymore. But anyway, I'm digressing. Love to see the vendor still out there, and Conehead is the minor league baseball's preeminent vendor.
Well, you make a great point too, like that it's just like iconic, and that's what you connect it with, that baseball team and that experience. I went to a baseball game recently with a friend of mine who didn't grow up in the Twin Cities, where I grew up in Minnesota. And he was like, so do you know Wally the Beer Man, who's a really famous, you know, same thing as Conehead, just like a personality at the ballpark. He was at the Met Stadium, at the Metrodome. I don't know if he's still around. Like you said, these guys, some of these age out. I mean, Wally was an old guy when I knew him in the 80s. But Wally the Beer Man had baseball cards, and I couldn't drink when I was a kid, but you knew Wally the Beer Man. You'd go get a card and make sure you say I had a Wally. I mean, again, like that's just part of the game experience. And you think about what, you know, game operations and game presentation, it's about experiences. This is what people bring up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel, not just in minor league baseball, but in baseball in general, maybe sports, they should be prioritized a little bit more, and maybe even paid a little bit differently, saying like, hey, maybe you're not making enough as a vendor to do this, but just like, we want to pay you to be a character. You have a personality, you have a costume. Those are the things that, you know, in a small way, that keep people coming back. I mean, very few people are going like, oh, I keep coming back because they have this one vendor. But those things cumulatively mean a lot. The atmosphere and the recurring characters and the sense of tradition you have, seeing the same people at the ballpark beyond the mascot, who's really the only character you can always be guaranteed to see at a minor league game.
Let me ask you this. On your list, you have our friend from Reading.
I do. You know, he almost goes without saying.
Yeah.
Reading Fightin' Phils, the crazy hot dog vendor. I got to reconnect with him this season when I visited Reading in April. In many ways, maybe the preeminent, you know, quote unquote, character in minor league baseball. It's a guy named Matt Jackson. He no longer works for Reading's front office, but he did for many years. He was a like graphic designer, creative services kind of guy. And, you know, there's a whole origin story. There was some, maybe you know this, Kudo, because you're from this world very deeply, but Reading had booked some sort of touring entertainer that had a flamingo costume. And, like, he didn't show up. And then somehow Reading just, they had this flamingo costume based on some performer who was going to come and use it, something like that. And they sort of created, did I say flamingo? Of course I meant ostrich. I'm sorry. I can't believe I said flamingo.
We'll edit that out, Ben.
But, you know, very minor league baseball, you have this ostrich costume for who knows what reason, and you create a whole character. So, you know, it evolved. The crazy hot dog vendor is, of course, this guy, Matt Jackson's alter ego, who, you know, wears kind of thick-framed, kind of nerdy glasses, an old-school paper vendor's capped, red and white striped, vertically striped shirt, and he, quote-unquote, rides an ostrich onto the field. And his ostrich Rodrigo, you know, it's not a real ostrich, and he throws hot dogs to the crowd. Yeah, sorry to break it to you. And he is not just like a little quirk of the ballpark experience. I mean, he stays out after, I believe it's in the middle of the second inning that he goes out. He's got the whole intro video. He stays out there, not on the field, but like on the concourse for the next several innings, you know, signing autographs. The team, if you made a list, has given out just about, name an item you give away as a souvenir at a minor league ballpark. There's crazy hot dog vendor, pillowcase and toothbrush holders and bobbleheads and t-shirts and winter caps and like a whole cottage industry around the crazy hot dog vendor. And when you walk in, you know, with recent renovations to Reading's ballpark, which I love, I was at First Energy Stadium, you know, built in 1950. They've renovated a lot. The new team store is much bigger than it used to be. And you walk in the team store and there's a huge, like ceramic section, statue of the crazy hot dog vendor, like greeting you as you walk in the store. So just kind of goes to show how a little creativity and just having the committing to the bit for day in and day out. I mean, that's such a big part of it. Really can pay dividends with something when you have a front office employee who loves the bit and is really willing to go all out. And it's going to start a little ragged, maybe a little like incidentally like this one did. But if you just like keep doing it and make it something the fans are looking forward to, who knew that this would be something? And now this guy Matt Jackson, he works elsewhere in the area, but he still shows up, to the games just to be the crazy hot dog vendor. And he was talking to me. He's like, "It's so funny. I can go anywhere in the city and people don't recognize me. But like, as soon as I put on like not much of a
Glass.
disguise, but some glasses and a shirt, then everyone's like,
The
ah!" And it
Superman.
just, yeah, he's like Clark Kent and Superman. Yep.
So, two quick Matt Jackson stories. I met him. We went to a Buffalo Bison, I'm sorry, a Reading Phils game. And committing to the bit, like, obviously, I'm kind of like an industry insider. I didn't, I don't present myself like that way, but I came up to him with another fellow mascot and we said hi. And we're kind of like, hey, love the gimmick and stuff. And dude, never broke character. It was just like, hey, total shtick, which I love. Totally committed to the bit. And we're like, okay, that's awesome. And also, I think I've told the story in the pod before. I have a crazy hot dog vendor shirt. And I remember one time I was having breakfast by myself, and this guy like looks across the room. He's like, "Is that a man holding a hot dog riding an ostrich?" And I'm like, "Yes, it is." So his wares are everywhere, and even when he's not well known, he's well known. That's such a great gimmick, and like you said, great showcase of the commitment to the bit, just creativity, and just riding with it, and what it's become there is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, there's a bunch. I won't get to them all, but one of the four new ballparks in 2025 was it's a fifth third. We used to have a lot of fifth third ballparks. It's a bank. Not as many fifth third ballparks, but there's a new one. I believe it's Fifth Third Field. Doesn't matter. Spartanburg, South Carolina, home of the Hub City Spartan Burgers. And that's a team that I've really been singing their praises in general, because they just went into their first season in existence, just gung ho with a kind of old school, irreverent minor league baseball energy, with like committing to different theme nights every day, and just a lot of creative between inning contests, and just a real sense of like wacky, you never know what you're gonna get kind of atmosphere at the ballpark. And their GM, Tyson Jeffers, came from St. Paul with the Saints, and I think that really shows. St. Paul, of course, we could get into them with ballpark characters. They have a whole squadron called the Ushertainers, who all have different characters. The gym teacher, coach, the French chef, a woman on roller skates, blah, blah, blah. So they brought some of that. Tyson has brought some of that energy into Spartanburg, and there's a character, speaking of a woman on roller skates, Jay Sparkle, and she's a woman who's just at every single game, like a game day employee who's on roller skates, and she just rolls through the concourse the entire game. I was there two nights, like permanent smile on her face, just beaming, just radiating, just like good energy. Just twirling and saying hello to everyone. And if you stop and talk to her, and she gave me one, I gave it to my son. She has little like homemade burger themed like charm jewelry. It was on a little safety pin, like a little burger, little tiny hamburger toy on a safety pin and some beads. And she gave me one, and she hands those out to kids. And again, that's one of the intangibles. People aren't going to tell you, "Oh, the reason I go to a Spartan Burgers game, it's because this woman was on roller skates." But that, to me, again, means so much, that like just something that's, not technically part of your admission fee is just part of the experience. And they also had they had several characters there. They also had a guy named, his name is Dante Carter. He's a stand-up comedian, and he has a character of being Chef Carter, wearing a chef hat. And one of the days I was there, they did a promotion where they handed out paper chef hats, and this ballpark character, Chef Carter, would write a personalized insult on every paper chef hat. Of like, you had to ask for it. He wasn't just like seeing people walk in and writing stuff. And I love that, because you think like on paper, like, here's a good promo idea. How about we get this local stand-up comedian to just write insults on hats? But like, that to me is funny, and it was funny watching people come up to him and really enjoying the being insulted. And so when you have Chef Carter and Jay Sparkle like at every game in Spartanburg, that's just gonna really increase the energy. And again, I think influenced by St. Paul, Which of course has a whole history of zany
Right.
in-game stuff, pigs and the ball pigs, that kind of hang out in the near the home dugout during the game and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the St. Paul Saints, their squadron of Ushertainers, I believe that legacy is continuing in Spartanburg, and interesting to see what the Spartanburgers do as the years go forward, because I think they really hit the ground running in terms of being a creative operating team, and that comes down to characters like Jay Sparkle and Chef Carter.
And I love that when you have a program that can grow and adapt and kind of, mix and mingle. Like the Ushertainers, they have like this troop and they probably started with four or five and now they have like 10 or 12 to choose from. Doesn't mean they're all at every game, but again, you get some variety. They have a casting call and they do like they work with local improv theater where they're bringing people in like, hey, do you want to come and try this and do this and create a character? And I love the variety that it brings.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the kind of thing that I know it's not necessarily easy to do, but sometimes I just feel like, why isn't this like
Yeah.
some version of this much more like taken for granted instead of like more of an outlier these days? I mean, there's still a lot of it throughout minor league baseball in various ways, shapes, and forms, but I feel like when teams don't have these identifiable characters, it just like you got to get one. And
Gets
again,
flat.
sometimes it happens a little incidentally, and maybe it's a little cart before the horse if you try to plan something organically. So I know it's a little tricky, but these
I love
things.
that injection of creativity that people like the Ushertainers bring. You just have like a troop of creatives. And so whatever promotion you're doing, whatever contest you're doing, you're going to have somebody interjecting some kind of wacky idea to it in a way that not every team has access to. And I think that that's a really creative piece that helps teams like the Saints just pop off the page. When you look at any contest they do, it always has like just some weird twist to it. And again, you're just surrounding yourselves with creatives.
Yeah, and this is the obviously insane, and with the Saints, it's the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis, like a well-populated area, and there's a big improv scene up there. So I know a lot of those Ushertainers come from improv backgrounds, and I do feel like teams, especially in larger markets, like reach out to those communities, those local comedy communities, improv communities, because you can probably find some game day employees that way. Who will have more of a sense of just yes and, of just getting out in front of fans, interacting, being goofy, willing to commit to the bit and whatever the bit may be, or just making up their own bits as they go along.
Right. And it's interesting too, like that troop of people, they're actually looking for opportunity. They're looking for places to perform. And a lot of times those improv stages are the only place in town. All of a sudden now it's like, oh, I can go to the ballpark and see 80 nights a year where there's going to be a new crowd and a new game to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And while like going to someone's improv show is sort of a cliche of like, ugh, I guess I gotta go, it doesn't have the sense of obligation. It's just like some zany energy in the midst of a larger outdoor sports scene. So, no
Exactly.
obligation required.
Interjection, energy, and creativity. I like that. You got another one for us?
Sure. Well, we did talk about how Eric the Peanut Guy started as a vendor. We talked about Conehead in Buffalo. Got to go with another one. And this guy, San Jose's Churros man, Super Churros man, his name is Hippolito Cerda. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it exactly right, Cerda. And he might not be a character in the sense of like a costume or really zany energy, but he is a guy who started selling churros at San Jose Giants games, and they became just what you did at the game, like towards the end of the game, maybe in the latter third, you've had some food, you've had your beers, whatever, and then like you look for the churros guy, and he became such a part of San Jose that their Copa de la Diversión identity, their alternate Hispanic themed identity, are the churros, and that's because of one guy. That's not because like San Jose, California is known for its churros writ large. I'm sure you can get churros throughout San Jose, but you know what I mean? It's not like Churro Town,
Right.
USA. San Jose is the churros because of this one guy and how much he meant. So they had, again, like kind of like the crazy hot dog vendor, they've had through the years giveaways, not just the Copa identity, but giveaways, bobbleheads, t-shirts. And last time I visited, he had sort of upgraded finally with some stadium upgrades. He now has his own, dedicated little concession area where he can sell the churros out of it. as opposed to vending. And he's been doing it for decades, so maybe that's good for him too that he doesn't have to haul them around the ballpark. But
Right.
I think a little bit is lost that you just don't have that energy, you know, churros, churros, churros going through the crowd because that's so San Jose. So I would say the Super Churros Man in San Jose definitely still qualifies as a character and has influenced the team's branding for a long time now in pretty significant ways in the way they brand and market themselves. I guess another sort of goes without saying one. You know, I said I wasn't doing mascots, but this is, of course, a secondary mascot. But, you know, how many times in my life doing the job I do have I talked about Mr. Celery in Wilmington? But, you know, that's a character in his own way. I mean, maybe does it count? It's a mascot. But, you know, the Blue Rocks, Wilmington Blue Rocks have a mascot. He's a moose named Rocky. And Mr. Celery, just like, you know, the crazy hot dog vendor's ostrich costume, no one knows where this celery costume really came from. Or I think some people know. I wrote a whole origin story on it. Maybe there was a some healthy food related event at the ballpark a couple decades ago and a celery costume got left behind. But regardless, the team ended up with a celery costume and they just create this character, Mr. Celery, who only emerges onto the field after the Blue Rocks score run. They play Blur's song number two, you know, woo-hoo! And he charges around and gets the crowd fired up and then disappears again. And now it's like there's probably as much branding with the Blue Rocks around celery than there is around this moose, Blue Wink. Did I say Rocky? Is it Rocky? Is it Blue Winkle? It's the Blue Rocks. I think the mouse, Blue Winkle. It all gets confused. So they're a team, Blue Rocks. They're a team called the Blue Rocks, named for, you know, more like geological features. They have a moose mascot, and Celery, Mr. Celery is probably what they're most associated with. So talk about the sometimes complete incoherent, but it works nature of minor league branding. I mean, that's what the Blue Rocks have is rocks, a moose, and a famous anthropomorphic stalk of celery.
That was a leftover. I love that. We're serving up leftovers.
So yeah, that's another good one. What else do we have? You know, if I was going to say he has since not retired, but stepped back from like day-to-day roles, it's tough to say like a front office employee in and of him or herself is a character, but I
They
would
sure
say
can be.
with the Richmond Flying Squirrels, I would say Parnie, Todd Parnell. Everyone knows him as Parnie, always wearing colorful pants. Just one of those guys with a personality. Just everyone knows him. Big booming voice, just big, warm, humorous. You know, get a beer after the game with them kind of guy. And everyone with any team he's worked through the years, and especially now he's been in Richmond for a long time, like he's just associated with the team that goes beyond like, you know, oh, I am the general manager, I am the vice president, I am the assistant general. Like he is just sort of like the face of the team in a lot of ways that goes beyond working for the front office, but more just being a character. And I was trying to think, are there other people in minor league baseball who just sort of being themselves qualify as like characters? Probably not many, as many as Parnell, Todd Parnell, Parney in Richmond. So
I feel like there's a lot of hosts who take on that kind of supersized role where they're just known as, you know, because your personality is on display. Obviously you're dialing up a little bit, but like that's a big step in terms of a host, in terms of capitalizing and becoming like a bigger part of the game than just introducing a contest. You become sort of like the face of the place.
yeah, it helps a lot to have those kind of people. I mean, obviously getting a job in minor league baseball shouldn't be contingent on being also a larger than life character, but
Doesn't
it's
hurt.
one of the few industries where it really can behoove you, and you don't even have to be at the top of the org chart at all. You can just be a sponsorship guy or in marketing or graphic design. If you just have the personality and a goofy idea, all of a sudden things can become traditions and become a big part of the fan experience. So I think that's about all I have just in what I jotted down, but I'm, you know, you're always missing somebody some a lot when you're doing this, but I think that's a fairly solid overview of the scene.
That's an incredible list, and I think it's a testament to what you do know. When that's like off the top of the cuff, here's Ben's quick list, which is just a supersized list of personalities and characters that again drive a lot of a lot of who these teams are and who they become in the community. I mean, I think some of, you sort of wrapped it up a little bit with Parney, but like that leverage and the takeaway, the strategic aspect of this is like, how do you find and identify that? I think some of this is like, allow some serendipity in your show and some silliness. Like you said, the celery is a great example. Like, what are we going to do with it? There's that costume left over from whatever it was. And just turning that into something where now it's like, it generates sales. They're selling celery t-shirts and there's probably sponsorships, embracing the weird and then looking to interject some of the fun, whether that be with personalities that are just there, they're selling beer already, or finding people like improv people and injecting them into your team. I think those are great, great takeaways for how to capitalize on these kind of personalities.
Yeah, I think so. And to me, maybe not 100% direct correlation, but like all the teams I mentioned, they're like teams in general that seem to operate well. There's not direct correlation, but like 100%. But I just think those kind of things translate to
For
good
sure.
energy in general, the same way that I just think the teams that have creative promotion schedules are likely just to be doing well overall. Because it just shows that willingness to go the extra mile, have fun, and show fans that they're going to get something a little unexpected, and that's what we all want.
It's true.
Be surprised.
Well, there'll be no surprises next month when you are back on this very podcast to talk about the best promos in minor league baseball in our brand new award segment called Kudos to You. Ben, I can't wait to talk to you again. This is the reason that I have you on, because it's always like this. It's always great insights with a deep history and a deep knowledge of what's going on out there in minor league baseball and beyond. So thank you so much for your time, and I can't wait to see you again next month. And we'll have some more fun. And this was unexpected, not unexpected. This is the expected takeaway from you. It's like, this is just great insight. I love this conversation. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. I'll talk to you next month. Kudos. Kudos for all.
Don't miss the daily water cooler on GameOps.com. Every weekday, we post a promotion, theme night, giveaway, or an activation that got fans talking. Last month, we added more than 20 water cooler posts. It's so important. We have a big water cooler graphic on every page on GameOps.com so you can find and join that conversation. This month at the water cooler, we looked at how the Oklahoma State University Cowboys primed the pump. One fan created some madness and how it's already paying dividends for their show. We also saw how the Mavs fans wasted no time planting their flag on the anthem. Who are the Mavs, you ask? Well, they're the team that already trained their fans to be involved and to stay involved. And we looked at how the American League Championship Series was affected by the Mariners' signature live race, the Salmon Run, and much more. But like Planet Fitness, this is a no-judgment zone. I am behind on water coolers, but not too bad. I'm catching up, which means more content's coming your way this month as I catch up at the water cooler. See everything people are talking about at the water cooler Monday through Friday on GameOps.com. That is a wrap for the November 2025 edition of the Party in the Back podcast on GameOps.com. Thank you for listening. We keep an eye on the homepage, plus Twitter, plus Instagram for new content every week. I encourage you to visit GameOps.com for the latest ideas, inspirations, and tools that will make your show shine. Big thanks to everyone who listens, reads, and supports us here at GameOps.com. And thank you for spreading the word about this podcast. Do us a favor. If you're on Instagram, give us a follow at GameOps.com, all spelled out GameOpsDotCom. And at Mascot Link. We're posting and reposting a ton of fun GameOps content, plus some of those VIP fan experiences from the top mascots in sports. Huge thanks to our producer, the very excellent Chad Gephardt. And thank you for joining us. We'll be back next month on the Party in the Back with more talk and analysis about that fun side of sports marketing, plus the all-new Kudos to You Awards for 2025. For my guest, Ben Hill, shouts out to Carrie Samick, Annabelle McBride, Brian Goak, and the entire Rocky River High School tennis team. This is John Kudo signing off. But please, let's keep the party going.
Thanks for joining us on the Party in the Back podcast. We'll see you next time.